Welcome everyone to the Nethercast podcast. If you're new to the channel or listening for the very first time, in addition to Mortal Kombat YouTube videos, we also do a long-form podcast talking more in depth on Mortal Kombat. This is currently our ninth year doing this. I say we because in addition to me, Cyborg, you also get Temp, who is our gameplay expert, Razor, who practically wrote the Bible on Mortal Kombat's lore. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone more knowledgeable on MK's lore than him, as well as Shad, who joins Razor in his love for the lore and adds some extra entertainment to boot. On today's episode, we're answering questions from our listeners here on YouTube, in our Discord, which you can find in the description. We'd love to have you join our awesome community going 5 years strong with daily conversations of all things Mortal Kombat, as well as from Twitter. So without further ado, the first question is from Ninja Nate, and he asks, okay, here's one for the upcoming Q&A. I'd like to see the chapter system in story mode done better with maybe less fights, especially jobber fights. More cutscenes, resulting in more in-depth storytelling. Do you think the current system is outdated, or should it stay with the fight-by-fight system? I'd like it to stay, but just done better. What do you guys think?
I think we should establish an answering order so as to avoid these awkward silences.
Sure.
Who goes first?
I'll just throw it to somebody, and then from there we'll just follow down the pattern, down the ladder on our Discord. So I'll throw it to somebody random, so that way it's not always the same person answering first. I guess I'll take this one first. We've talked about this. If anybody that's been listening to our episodes, you've known we are not a big fan of the chapter system in story mode. I don't think it's the best way to tell a story. I think if they just did a movie, you'd probably have a much more coherent story, and you wouldn't run into the jobber situation where it's always the heroes beating on the bad guys. Razor, what do you think?
To my mind, there's two ways to really do story mode differently that could work and be satisfying. One of them is what I like to think of as the Deadly Alliance conquest system, or you could compare it to I think the first games that did this kind of thing were like Bloody Roar. The most recent Soul Calibur did it. Basically, you pick the character, you're on the select screen, and that character gets in Deadly Alliance it was 10. It could be less than that. If you want to, you know, tell a tighter story, you could be 4 or 5 fights, it doesn't matter, but those fights aren't in a row. Like, in MK versus DC, you know, there were 2 story modes. Both of them were canon, but one was from the MK character's perspective and one was from the DC character's perspective. And after you played them both, you could kind of tell what order each fight was supposed to go in. Like, well, Sub-Zero fought Superman before this fight with Shang Tsung and Green Lantern or whatever. You know, you could sort of figure out the order after you'd played them. You could do it that way. You could also do the Street Fighter V story mode way, which I know a lot of people think Street Fighter V story mode was bad. I attribute that to the fact that the story of the Street Fighter games is very much a Saturday morning cartoon and always has been, so I don't know why anyone was surprised that the story mode they got was a Saturday morning cartoon.
I agree with that 100%.
But the
Alpha 2 had a good story. But anyway,
it had a good story, but with Saturday morning cartoon tone and elements. Like, the only really serious thing that happens there is Charlie gets shot. Falls off a cliff. I'm not sure exactly how it happens. It's multiple versions. But the point is, Street Fighter V story mode would change which character you were playing as on the fly. And often you would be playing as a villain because the story wanted the villain to win that fight. And so you'd be like Chun-Li one moment and Vega the next, and then you jump to Balrog. It didn't have to be the same in a row. It didn't have to hold your hand and treat it like a training mode, which is, Ed Boon sees the story modes as kind of like a training mode. It's often the first mode a person jumps into if they're not a big online competitive kind of person. So they're learning the characters for the first time, and he doesn't want to confuse them by throwing them a new moveset to learn every 5 seconds. I get that. But I preferred the way Street Fighter did it. The only thing Street Fighter V did wrong is that you would very often be given the player, the character on the right-hand side, your player two, and you don't know it until the fight starts. And you're like, okay, this is Chun-Li versus Vega. I'm probably playing as Chun-Li because she's on the left and I expect her to beat Vega's ass and all that kind of thing. And then you start pressing buttons and Vega's the one that moves. You're like, wait, I'm the guy on the right? Fucking what? So you gotta always have the character the player is using be on the left so that they know which one they are. That's the only real mistake Street Fighter V made, in my opinion. But other than that, that's just, I would just do it like that. Just switch characters on the fly. Sometimes you're the villain. The end. I guess Shad's up next.
I suppose if you're going to toss me the mic like that.
Well, you are in the order.
Yeah. I have always been an admirer of the way that Guilty Gear X2 did things. Wherein you selected your character, and you went down the story mode with them, and you had usually three different paths to follow, depending on what kind of criteria that you actually followed. Like, you know, whether you beat someone in, like, under 60 seconds, if you did a perfect, you finished them with a super, that kind of thing. I'm not saying that we necessarily need those, but I like the freedom that a mode like that enjoys, where you can just concentrate on your one character and follow their story, go through things as you see fit.
The branching paths, multiple choice, Killer Instinct did that too.
Yes, it did. Really, really early on, Killer Instinct 2. Yeah. But Guilty Gear X2 kind of made a whole story. Guilty Gear X and X2 made a whole story mode out of it. Text-based adventure between fights, but it was a lot of fun. And the beauty of that kind of thing is, like, you don't necessarily have to force every character to interact, you know? I could really easily see a mode like that being perfect for something like Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, where, like, Kitana and Jade and Reptile are, like, off in their own little world or their story, and they don't interact with too many people, for example, until the end of things. Like, you know, you could have Reptile do his own thing, which intersects with the main story, and maybe you can just, I don't know, piece by piece unlock a giant cinematic mode based off of the canon, quote-unquote, cutscenes from everyone's story. No jobbing. No jobber fights. No beating at Baraka or Ermac or whoever over and over and over again, you know? I've always loved that kind of a system. And you could use that as a training mode to get to learn your character better without, oops, it's five fights on, now you're shunted off to the next guy, you know? That's how I do it. And even if you have branching paths like that, there's always the fun, you know, what-if modes, things that don't necessarily make any sense, fun endings, non-canon endings. There's a lot of room. There's a lot of open room. Like, the more that gaming advances towards AAA games, and the more everything becomes this giant story, giant interactive movies, the less room there is for the fun things, the paths not taken, the what-if scenarios, you know? And I miss that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's how I do it. Unique story modes for every character that can maybe align in bits and pieces to one overarching thing. Temp?
Yeah, not a lot to say about this. I don't think this would be popular among the MK guys, but I really enjoy how Exerd and Guilty Gear Strive have done it. Just include a movie with the game and watch the movie. If they don't do that, that is how I'm going to watch it regardless. I'm just going to YouTube the story.
Yeah.
I don't really plan on playing like 20 matches to get through a 2 to 3 hour story mode. This is not to say I don't want single player content. I like the GGX2 idea as like a single player arcade experience. But for just telling the canonical stories, so in 5 years we just have on record what happened in that Mortal Kombat game, for that, I would just say include a movie. Just put a movie in the game.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, when we, Injustice 2 and Mortal Kombat 11, that's how we watched the story modes. We watched them all together, you know, before the game even came out. And that was, to me, that was the ideal way to experience story mode. So much more fun when you're just watching it with friends without having to do the fights, you know, every couple minutes.
And with the tension there is that sometimes you have to beat the story mode to get a character in MKX.
Yeah.
Or it's like, man, like in MK11, I really didn't want to play the story mode, but they're going to give me some money if I do. And I really like these gloves from Collector, right? So it's like, eh, I guess I'll play the story mode. I don't like, now that gear's probably gone, I don't know how they'll be able to get me to play the story mode on the console unless they lock something like costumes or characters or even right. better gloves for Collector, something like that, right?
It'll be costumes at the very least, or gear or whatever, yeah.
Because costumes are a big sell. Like I've always said, I never thought you should lock characters, but I was always okay with locking costumes. I never thought locking costumes was a bad thing. I loved unlocking costumes, right? So that would be one thing that would get me to play it, but obviously, I don't want the chapter system back. That's the big takeaway here. Don't make me play chapters. I don't want to fight fucking AI Kung Jin. I don't care. Just give me a movie.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to just packing a movie, you know, with the game, and you don't actually have to be interactive to get the canon story. I think they could actually save themselves a lot of troubles. A lot of the flaws of their storytelling come from trying to force interactivity into places. But I also feel like there's a lot of untapped avenues for interactivity and storytelling to mix. Like I said in a previous episode that I wish some of the things from the MK9 Challenge Tower had been elements of story mode. Like, let me play against a horde of Tarkatans, and the mechanic is just that Tarkatans keep walking across the screen, and all I have are my projectile button, and I just keep knocking them down, and that could be a mini game that is part of the story.
That is what Granblue does, actually. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. There's I've always like been a big proponent of more tag team in story because most of the characters function as part of a team. Liu Kang fights alongside Kung Lao or Katana. Katana fights alongside Jade and Melina. Sub-Zero and Smoke. Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Sub-Zero and Sub-Zero maybe one day.
Yeah, as if.
There are so, like, Sonya and Jax. There are so many, like, teams in the lore that are not being represented as a team in any gameplay mechanic, and it's weird to me.
They could do the splitting pass thing in MK11, which I thought was good, but there wasn't enough of it to make me replay the story mode without going on YouTube.
My problem with splitting paths or multiple choice or what if scenarios you can take your story down by like doing different criteria or choosing things or whatever is that then at the end of it you have people who are confused about what is and isn't canon.
Yeah, it's the Mass Effect problem.
Yeah,
it's 100%.
That's one of the most frustrating things, like after a game is over and it's just talking about it online is how we sort of keep it alive. And it's like Just the confusion and frustration, and this goes back to the old arcade endings. Like, I dream of a Mortal Kombat where all of the arcade endings are just epilogues for that character that come after story mode, and every single character in the game has a canon arcade ending. That's my dream. We'll never get it, but that's what I wish for.
No. But I think we could do something like that with the MK11 approach, where the splitting paths are two things that happen, but you only see one of those things depending on which path you take. So instead of does Sub or Scorpion fight Noob Saibot or Sector, it would be you choose whether you play Scorpion and Sector or you choose whether you play Sub and Noob. That's
yeah,
how I
mean,
would.
those are choices that don't change anything or matter. I'm more concerned about, like, arguing, did Liu Kang win at the end or did Shang Tsung win at the end? And trying to explain
to people that
Shang Tsung's ending doesn't leave room for a sequel. Everybody's fucking dead.
Yeah, then you have the problem of, did Shepard have sex with Tali? And you're right, I don't want to be in that camp either. That's not fun for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just frustrating.
Next question?
Sure. So Seorla, I believe, is how you pronounce it, Seorla. You've spoken in the past about how Mortal Kombat should be primarily Asian influenced, namely 70s kung fu movies. How much of a threshold do you think there should be for showcasing the myths and martial arts of non-Asian cultures? Razor, go ahead and take this one first.
25%.
There you go. Shad?
I want to say something like 40.
Temp.
18%.
18. All right. Very specific. Yeah, I'm going to go 50. At least 50%. You know, you got to get that 50% Asian / Kung Fu influence, and then you can kind of balance the other half with whatever you want.
I mean, the thing you have to keep in mind is that there are things that aren't from Earth, but are still meant to look Asian, like most of Outworld.
And you can
argue like different, like if Kotal Kahn is the emperor at the time, then some of that architecture is going to be torn down and rebuilt with Aztec looking stuff. But most of the time you're dealing with Shao Kahn and buildings that have been built for him, or, you know, places and characters working for him wearing outfits that are supposed to be members of his army. That shit should look like ninjas and samurai. And then you've got like villages, like Shao Kahn probably doesn't have that much influence over Li Mei's village, but we know that she looks Chinese and the people of her village have like a Chinese theme going on. So the main thing is just less America. It's not necessarily more Asia that we need. It's less Sonya and Jax and Johnny Cage. That's, I guess, my big concern. Well, that and their tendency to reimagine Outworld these days as less Japanese in purple and more as generic Mad Max. I am so sick of Mad Max. Like, I love the Mad Max movies, but I'm so sick of other things copying Mad Max. It's everywhere, and it's just become this brown slurry taking over all of pop culture. It's like Smoke's nanobots taking over Edenia. We're living on planet Mad Max, and I'm done with it.
You know, for all those Armageddon endings are horrible things to be forgotten, you sure love bringing up Planet Smoke.
Because it's funny.
What's gonna stop, man? Not seriously. With Outworld being a hodgepodge of conquered worlds, there is room to incorporate influences and designs from any number of mythologies worldwide. The obvious example that comes to mind is Motaro, who comes right out of Greek mythology. You could take any figure you wanted, any mythological figure at all. We have vampires, we have Oni, we have the centaurs, we have half dragon people. You can throw any of that into Outworld because it's inherently a melting pot of different societies and cultures. Anything works. Let me ask you this. Hang on.
Okay.
I think that where you don't want to muck with things too much is the cosmology of MK. Because it's kind of, that particular part of it is pretty overtly Asian influenced. And it's got these influences like, you know, the one being Panku or whatever, you know. There's this cosmology there that I don't think that you should trifle with too much. Because like when you do what MK11 did, you try to introduce other things like, hey, suddenly there are all these other Lovecraftian things out there. Why are they there? Who knows? When we were always told it was just the one being in the Elder Gods. So I don't think you should mess with the mythology, but I think that you can include the mythology of other things, real things, in the universe as much as you like, generally speaking.
Sure. I'm just saying, like, but what if Motaro was wearing samurai shoulder pads, though?
I'm trying to picture it. I don't know if he can pull them off. I think he actually looks quite dashing with that skull around his neck in MK9. It worked for him.
The skulls are so generic to me. I figure you could do something better than that.
Well, that's my two cents. Tamp.
I'm not much to say on this one. I like the Threshold movie. There are some things, though, that I've never been a big fan of, but those are not really made into the games anyways, so it's not really a big problem for me. For the most part, I always say just stick to Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3 visually, and you'll be in a fairly good place. I think if you stick, if you walk that line, you're never really going to have a problem. That's really all you got to say about it.
For the record, I don't think they were saying anything about the Threshold movies. I think they were saying, what's the threshold that between the percentage of, like,
it's on Planet Smoke right now.
Okay, yeah. So, son of a bitch. In that case, well, obviously, if we're talking about Threshold movies, it is 18%. But, give me a second. I'm rereading the question.
How much of Mortal Kombat is it okay if it doesn't look Asian?
Yeah. What's the threshold, basically?
Honestly, I would say 30% is fine. Like, I mean, obviously, yeah, I contextualize that. Like, obviously, MK3 is not going to look super Asian. But, like, generally, if you're in the fantasy elements of Mortal Kombat, I'd say 30% non-Asian is a good number.
I mean, there are, like if you're doing like a more NetherRealm heavy story, I want to see more of like the Eastern European industrial metal influence. You know,
I want to see them like pull shit out of like the Ars Goetia and Ars Demonica, like those old school, what is it, 17th, 18th century drawings of demons. You find them in Castlevania all the goddamn time.
Yeah, I mean,
we could stand to have some NetherRealm demons that aren't just like generic blah toothed things, you know?
We could have some more of some monstery like old paintings of what people thought hell looked like and that kind of thing. But I really miss the like the Rammstein concert aesthetic from Mythologies. That's all.
I'm always gonna miss Mythologies, the version that was inspired by Earthrealm. Yeah, me too.
But even
if
then,
I could put Shinnok's fortress and the surrounding area back that way, I would.
Even then, like the Armageddon Shinnok Tower has like pagoda roofs, and that's cool too. They did that tower in Battle of the Realms. I thought it looked good.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to Tiberius Jefferson here. Do you guys think that the crypt mode in 11 seems like it could have been a test for how they could possibly approach a new conquest mode? Seems perfectly possible to me. Plus, Ed has mentioned a new conquest mode on Twitter a while back and seems into the idea. Chad?
It's entirely possible. I'd love to see it happen. Whether I believe WB will let them funnel the money and resources into that kind of a project is another question entirely. But I would personally have a lot of fun running around in a mode as detailed and lovingly sculpted as 11's conquest mode, not conquest, 11's crypt mode was, that was fully interactable with enemies and, you know, actual combat. I would love that. Could it be a test? Maybe. I'm not going to put money on it, though.
Temp, did you have anything to add to that?
Well, I think it depends also what you mean by conquest. I think really the way they shaped the crypt in MK11 was designed to get as many people to log in as many days consecutively as possible. And I think they may have drawn some inspiration from conquest, but, and I could be wrong about this, but my gut tells me it was not intended to be a prototype for anything. I don't think we'll see anything like that in a story environment anytime soon. So, but like Shad said, I do think it's very possible. But I'm inclined to think that's not the case.
Yeah, I don't think as much as we want to believe that a conquest mode is coming, or that's what they've kind of teed up by continually expanding the crypt with each game over the last few to be more and more involved like that. But you could be right. In fact, I think you probably are right, at least in terms of why, like, their main desire for it was to keep people engaged and coming back every single day and spending your time in there. Hence why they went with, like, the random loot and, you know, the refills and then the hidden items that only pop up at certain... Like, they wouldn't have done all of that unless they specifically were trying to keep you playing every single day, logging in, like Temp said. But that doesn't mean that there couldn't be, you know. Obviously there's a passion there. I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle here. But yeah. Do I think it's gonna be in 12? It's hard to say. I don't necessarily know that we have anything to go off outside of just Ed saying he'd like to do it. Razor, did you have anything to add on that?
I think the engine that they had for the crypt would need very little change in order to replicate Shujinko's conquest. He swings a punch instead of a hammer,
right?
And he opens chests. And that is the absolute limit of interactivity that mode had. So we're already there.
Right.
It's all the same stuff. It would just need to be 5 more maps.
Just give the guy a way to sit down and meditate. Time pass.
Yeah.
All right. We'll jump to Renee Valdez's question. She has two. And the first one is just pretty much for Razor and Chad here. And she asks, have you all ever considered doing a remaster of earlier Lost episodes, like 4-plus-year-old ones? Razor, Chad?
We take so long to do the Lost, and we have so many characters that I don't see us going back to any of the older ones until after we've finished everybody. Which is going to be in another, 10 years.
Guys, the con episode will be out by the end of the week. I swear to God. No, really. It does take us a long time. It's mostly on me, because I like to, you know, work my editing and sound production chops at these things. It's a learning experience for me, and I'm also an insane perfectionist, and it's a mistake to put anything like this into my hands. But that aside, I'm pretty happy listening back every now and then with how they turned out. Like, sure, we don't have the benefit of, like, the MK11 stuff. And I can see us maybe going at some point and doing a what did we think about these characters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kind of way, like Liu and Raiden and whatnot. But as to actually doing Liu Kang all over again, doing just starting the entire roster again... No, that's not going to happen.
I can't imagine that there's more than like 3 or 4 characters total. Like, and it's like the first 3 or 4 where we somehow missed something and have a need to go back. Like Shang Tsung, I could see, because we did that one before they put Kerry Tagawa in the games.
Yeah.
But I mean, we really, the point of the Lost is mostly to cover every detail from especially the old timeline. Like, I only enjoy talking about the new timeline in so much as it allows me to point out the problems with it and how something they did in an older game was better. So I don't want to talk about, like, Johnny Cage in MK11, or when 12 comes out, go back and do every character's role in 12. Like, I don't care what Kitana does in 12. I already talked about my favorite parts of Kitana.
I wouldn't mind like discussing Johnny in 11 personally, because he's a lot of fun. He's one of the best things of the new games, absolutely. But the thing is, at the end of the day, I want more than the Nethercast and the Lost on my gravestone, and I want to do other things eventually.
I don't know. I feel very much like the Johnny Cage in 11 is the same character we got in 9 and X. And the only thing to discuss there is how he interacts with his younger/older self. And it was fun, but none of it's new information. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a Lost.
All right. Well, we're going to skip the second question for now, just because we're trying to get through as many as possible, but we will absolutely circle back if we get time. That goes for any ones that have posted multiple. Jumping to Starzilla, the 83rd on Twitter, most and least favorite MK game, and more specifically, a specific port, if it matters. For me, that's tough. I think I play, you know, like Ultimate MK3 probably the most, so that might be my favorites. If not that, Mortal Kombat 9. And least favorite, Probably Mortal Kombat 1. Not just, I mean, it's got the nostalgia factor, but in terms of like fun to play, probably the least. Yeah. Razor?
To play, I would say either Shaolin Monks or 9. And I didn't have the PlayStation 1 with Kratos, just the regular 9, so. Least favorite.
Is it also 9?
In some ways. I don't know, maybe Arcade UMK3, because I can't get past Jade and she's the first fucking fight on the tower. I would say Special Forces if I'd ever played it. I've actually not played Special
Forces. Yeah, I'm not gonna, I think we probably shouldn't even count that just because, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's, it's kind of taken the obvious.
Grubs.
I'm not a super fan of playing 11.
You're boys, not men.
Deadly Alliance, to be fair, I don't think gameplay-wise.
Okay.
That's the problem with Mortal Kombat is there is no perfect game. The ones where they have my favorite stories have my least favorite gameplay, and the ones that have my favorite gameplay have my least favorite stories. So everything gets us flat 5 out of 10.
All right. That's fair. Yeah. Chad.
Okay, my most favorite is Mortal Kombat game in all the whole wide world. It's always going to be Mortal Kombat 2, no question. Are there better games? Yes. I'm not going to be a fool and sit here and say MK2 is an objectively superior fighting game to 9. That's madness. But MK2 is the source of so many memories and so much fun, and it's just this big pool of mystery. It's this whole world of lore that opened up. It's this portal, haha, into this huge new world. And it's always going to be number one in my heart. Least favorite... Oh, yes. Least favorite game? You know, I'm going to take shit for this, but it actually, honest to God, might be 11. Which is not to say I think 11 is a bad game, but it was just lacking in a lot of ways. Like, it was the first time playing Mortal Kombat felt like a chore to me on so many levels.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, there's so much to love.
You know,
now from getting into ports, specifically, most favorite arcade game, like I said, MK2, most favorite game, MK2, arcade. That's it. The worst MK game of all time, including ports, is Mortal Kombat Advance. And this is not a question. This is not an opinion. This is a fact. This is the game that got ones and zeros when it was reviewed in EGM. This was a port of UMK3 for the home console and Game Boy Advance, and you need to see it to believe it. Hell, go play it. I dare you.
Yeah, I never have, or I would have immediately brought it up, but...
Oh, it's bad. It is so bad.
All right. Temp.
I mean, like everyone else, I gotta separate gameplay and just the product, right? So if it's gameplay, it's MK9. Nothing really to say there. MK9, from a gameplay perspective, is the smartest and most well-designed MK game, even if it does have some severely bad flaws, right? Like the input bug, player one advantage, corner infinites, 100% combos, like it's in just terrible top six, top seven balance characters, right? But yeah, it's MK9. As a product, I will always say Deception. And it's very, again, it's simple to explain, but you can't really explain it at all, because Deception was the end of an 8-year wait. And if you didn't wait through those 8 years, you don't know what it was like to play Deception, to see Ermac back for the first time, to see Smoke back for the first time, to see these characters we have not heard about in forever get brand new designs. That was really the official end of the palette swaps, right? So playing Ermac for the first time in October 2004. You can't know what that was like. So that is my favorite Mortal Kombat game of all time. And I like that roster. It's the right amount of risk. Too many new characters Who knew that would be a theme? But yes, I think 8 new characters was a little ridiculous. But other than that, I think it is the perfect blend of the old and the weird, right? The classic and the fringe. I will always love that game. The worst Mortal Kombat, I mean, it's kind of like the MK9 thing. Obviously, it's 11, like by far. Like, I hate playing the game. I hate how they diminish combos. I hate the fact they wouldn't nerf the top tier. I hate the fact that jab anti-airs are in the game, but they buff low kicks, so it doesn't matter. I just hate playing that game. I hate looking at that game. I hate how bald Kung Lao is. I think Kronika's fucking stupid. Everything about that game just sucks. But again, that is just like such a mathematical answer. I want to give an honorable mention to my actual least favorite MK game of the ones that matter. It's Mortal Kombat 4. Even though I love Shinnok and I love the idea of a game taking place in Edenia, that game is just rough and I don't like the roster. And I think a lot of the characters just weren't, I don't really like a lot of the redesigns in that game. And it graphically aged horribly. Gameplay, the good is good, right? But if you take it, if you look at the full picture, it's very problematic in, from a gameplay level, right? You can tell Tobias was leaving because some of the story things were just really unrefined. Like Sonya saying she followed Liu Kang into the Netherrealm without any explanation about only evil people can go into the Netherrealm. Little things like that really bother me. It just felt like a soft reboot in the worst way, even though I do like a lot of things in that game. I think it's just historically very important. But the arcade beta of that game had noobs I bought, and they took him out. There are pictures in an EGM that I don't have anymore of noobs I bought on the select screen.
He's unlockable in the home consoles.
I mean, but that's the home console, and he has no ending.
He was in really early revisions, and yeah.
Yeah.
Out he went. Yeah. Favorite Reiko.
So Reiko stole the throwing stars from him for being real, right? To tell you the truth, man, like, Mortal Kombat 4 has a lot of problems, and out of all the games, I would rather play MK1 than MK4, just because MK1 has something unique to offer. I feel like MK4 is just kind of a janky MK3.
Yeah, I get that. But I've played way more 4 than I have 3.
How? How did you do that?
I never owned 3 for a home console.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I rented it a lot from, like, the video store, but I never owned a copy.
Are you counting Trilogy and Ultimate here?
I am counting Ultimate and Trilogy.
Huh.
I have... Until it... There's a copy of Ultimate with Armageddon or one of the other 3D era games, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, until whichever one it was, I never owned a home copy of any of the MK3s. I don't like 3 that much. We've talked about this on the show. I don't enjoy the city and spandex aesthetic. I've gotten used to it over time and come to appreciate what Tobias was going for, but I prefer 4 over... If I was ranking the arcade games, I'd probably go MK2, MK4, MK1, MK3.
Damn. I never knew that. We've been doing this for 8 years. I never knew you never bought MK3.
Yeah.
You know... On the day when we all, like, go to Chicago to, like, go to those MK conventions at, like, Galloping Ghost and, like, be at a hotel and, like, stick around for, like, 3 days, one of those days, you're gonna wake up in a UMK3 ninja outfit, and you're gonna like it.
All right. I like it.
I promise.
So, speaking of John Tobias, Crystal on Twitter asks... Had John Tobias not left Midway, do you think all the characters in Tao Feng would have been the characters we would have gotten in the 3D era? Shad?
Oh, God, no. Have you seen those people? No, like, for real. Jesus, I just had them up. I don't remember the Tao Fang guys very well, but I remember that one of the things that struck me about them specifically was they all felt really, really uninspired. It was like,
it was
like he was taking like some of the elements that worked really well about certain MK games and like trying to reboot them. Like there's one guy that kind of has like a Kano thing on his chest and he looks like a big tough guy and like the whole like red glowing medallion thing like on his breast, whatever. Like something about a lot of these characters just feels like really MK light.
It's the wish.com MK. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's I don't like saying this, but most of those designs were not very good or very memorable. They were at the most, I feel like they could maybe be background characters in an MK media adaptation. I don't know. Sorry.
Well, I think it was more coming from had he not left and he was if he continued to be the guy that came up with this stuff, then he would have never made Tao Fang and those character ideas being put in Mortal Kombat, assuming that he already came up with those. I think that's the idea behind it. I don't necessarily, that's not maybe not realistic on how life works, you know, when it's the butterfly effect, right? Something changes and completely different, you know, result. So I don't necessarily think just because he left and did Tao Fang that those same ideas would have come up for Mortal Kombat. And like you said, you know, a lot of those probably came by proxy of him not having the Mortal Kombat characters he had anymore. So
look,
start
up a
over. Let's kind of try and recapture some of those same ideas.
Yeah, look up a character called the Fatalist. This is basically like an edgier, more Rob Liefeld-esque Kano. It doesn't work. It's like he was really trying to recapture like the same lightning in a bottle, and it's...
Well...
No.
So here's what strikes me about the Tao Fang characters and how you can tell that he was out of ideas and had used his best stuff on Mortal Kombat. Here are some character names. Master Sage, Iron Monk, Divine Fist, Jade Dragon, Fiery Phoenix, Fierce Tiger, The Exile. These are names. These are their whole ass names. These aren't like a description of their job. These aren't like a title. These are their fucking what's on their health bar.
It sounds like he was reading comic books and just put their names in a blender, because a lot of those are just like, instead of Iron Fist, you have whatever the hell he said.
Iron Monk. Yeah, that's
Iron Monk. And then there was another one with Fist at the end of it.
What does your fucking birth certificate say? What's your actual name? Because it can't possibly be this.
My last name is Fatalist.
What is?
I get along really well at parties.
Can you think of a more generic name you've ever heard in history than Master Sage? First of all, that's redundant. He's a master and a sage. I bet he is.
What if it was Wise Master Sage?
Wise Masters, it's a little short. There are only, on the entire select screen, there are only two characters whose names sound like a name. One of them is Zhao Yen, and the other is Wulong Goth. And Wulong Goth is some kind of bug monster alien. It's not even a guy.
Well, that's fair. That could be his birth name, then.
He's got the most normal sounding name, and he's the one that's the alien bug.
Wulong Goth sounds like what someone who's never seen Quan Chi before would guess Quan Chi's name is.
I mean, they're not far off with Wu Lei.
It could be like a Victor Von Doom thing where it's like Master like Jake Sage. We don't know. Like, maybe he owns a dojo.
I want you guys to like go look up Wulong Goth and ask yourself this question. The answer should be apparent. No. No, these characters would not have been used in a future Mortal Kombat game.
He looks like a tokusatsu monster. He looks like the Power Rangers would beat him up and he would explode.
He looks like a guy literally wearing the outfit on one of those shows, yes.
Yeah, he has a human face. And everything. Like...
It kind of looks like Raiden. I mean, with minus the bug stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, he like the face, the structure of his like nose and mouth. He's got like the way John Tobias draws old men.
It's very 3D era-esque in that regard, at least.
The thing is that Tao Fang and Deadly Alliance came out at about the same time. So if Tobias were there working on Deadly Alliance, none of these characters would have been in, but both games heavily lean on the Shaw Brothers aesthetic when coming up with new characters. Like, I could see how elements of the costume designs in Tao Feng could have found their way into Li Mei and Bo Rai Cho and so on. It's just that the process for making an MK game involves a lot more sitting around a table as a group and brainstorming character names together. So somebody still would have sat at that table and been like, we can't call her Fiery Phoenix. That's terrible.
Go with
How
Blaze
about Li
or
Mei?
Mocha.
That sounds like a name.
Yeah, I think Steve Barron had a big influence on that process, even if it was like Tobias's character. I'm sure, like in the cubicle next to Tobias, was Steve Barron giving feedback on all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Be like, what if we called her Li Mei? That sounds like a name.
Just like We Mei.
Exile.
Well, we'll move on. Hunter Petrus asks, been watching your guys, well, he didn't ask this part, but been watching your guys' content since the beginning of Injustice 2 discussions. Great stuff. Well, we appreciate that. My question is, with the talk of 3D era characters being in the next game, do you think any of them will have huge roles in the story or just simple henchmen? If so, which ones would be the most likely to, or which would be most likely important to the story? That's a thinker of a question. I mean,
I want to say that barring another deception, which I think is extremely unlikely to happen, MK has kind of settled into this stage where we kind of know who our protagonists are. We know who our antagonists are. And most characters from the 3D era, barring maybe Kenshi, are very much kind of background characters or henchmen or Bo Rai Cho, who's kind of like another wise sage leader kind of figure. It depends what you mean by important to the story.
I could see like a Reiko maybe playing more of a lead role in Havoc and stuff.
I mean, I could see like Reiko or like, you know, someone having that kind of general role where he comes in and barks orders and is kind of like the obstacle on the way towards the main bad guy. Yeah, sure. But, you know, Kira and Cobra, they're going to be there to get beaten up. Frost is going to be there to... I don't know. It's tough. They certainly did give Frost a lot to do in 11, didn't they? No, yeah. Like it or hate it aside. And she was fairly important. There's only room for so much of that, though. It's not out of the possibility. And I think that that's one of the reasons we all want Havoc back, is that Havoc kind of begs to have this huge story role.
Yeah, Havoc doesn't work as a henchman. He doesn't answer to other people.
So no, Havoc yet he maybe
doesn't.
Havoc maybe, Hotaru maybe.
Easy Retcon can fix that, Razor.
Hotaru, there is nobody who's better as a henchman than Hotaru. Nobody more willing to take orders from someone else.
Yeah, he can be like a general type of figure, sure.
Yeah, but I don't know, even the generals.
My
in
point is just
MK
that like,
games are really just more reptiles and barakas.
Well, my point is that, you know, just some characters have that kind of goon archetype built in.
Sure.
Kira and Cobra and to an extent Su Hao.
I mean, even some of the trilogy characters are in that role.
Oh yeah,
too,
absolutely.
Yeah, like reptile and
always
so on.
Always have been. Just some characters are just there for certain roles, but there's the possibility. It depends who they choose.
I mean, I think the only real like big story role that could go to a 3D character
Shujinko,
if they bring I could see them finding a way to marginalize Shujinko. I think if Taven, I doubt they'll ever use Taven because he kind of insists upon a bigger role just by existing, so I think they'll avoid Taven. But if they don't, he would have a bigger role. I think the main one is Onaga, because Onaga has to be a boss almost.
Yeah.
He's just a guy. All right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's all fair. Temp, did you have anything to add on to that?
Well, I think I would say some characters I like because they are a small role. I don't necessarily want some of my favorite characters to be elevated into the story. I like Reptile as a Servant. I don't think Reptile needs to be like one of the forefront characters. I don't think he's built for that. And I don't think that's what makes him interesting. Baraka was a miracle. They did it and it worked, but I don't see that happening twice, right? Also, the more important they make your favorite 3D air character, the more likely they're going to reinvent their personality or their core character aspects. And I think Havoc is in grave danger of that. I feel like even the comic didn't really do true justice to Reiko or Havoc from what I didn't read the whole thing. I didn't love what I saw, though. So be very careful what you wish for. I would say if they were a henchman of Deadly Alliance or Deception, I am perfectly okay with them staying a henchman. Just when they are on screen, make them cool, right? But I don't really need fan service regarding any of these characters. Just present them as they are and as they were, and you know, make them flashy and fun to watch. That I don't.
A gameplay and like in that aspect, yeah. I would hope they polish them up and make them, you know.
Well, even story special. Though, like for instance. We were talking about Shinnok last episode, parrying everyone's attacks like it was nothing. That was sick. That was stuff like that is fine. I don't want to see fucking General Knight Natara. I don't need to see that. I'm good. Just make Natara a vampire. Just make her cool. Right. And make her have fun interactions with the characters she should logically be around. You know, the Natara and Cyrax show. Fine. But, like, don't go crazy with that.
You don't want the Moloch and Draman drama hour?
Oh, well, obviously I do, but I mean, those characters were designed for that.
They have a talk show. They have like coffee mugs. It's like Conan and Andy, whatever his name is, and then obviously Draman's Conan, and then Moloch is the fucking side guy.
Dan Forden is writing the theme song for those two. He's like, finally a job of substance. Finally something with meaning to it. Yeah, no, that'd be great. But yeah,
Dan Warlock and Drummond Hour, we interview puny flesh mortals and eat them.
It's very Adult Swim. I like it.
Well, I mean, it all goes back to that question about chapter system. I mean, if it's still the chapter system in the same old way they're telling stories for the last several games since MK vs. DC, you know, you're always going to run the risk at these characters not getting a great showing. I mean, what do we see? Aaron Black not get a great showing in 11. We saw Ferator amount to nothing in X, so on and so forth. This happens all the time. So, yeah, I mean, you're always going to run that risk. Now, if they change up their storytelling, I'd like to hope that they make these characters actually mean something. I mean, if you're going to make them have fans, I mean, my biggest proponent of bringing them back to begin with is because if you want them to have real fan bases outside of like the people that have been fans for that long that are you've been clamoring for them back, but like of a modern casual audience that may not even know who those characters are, don't even know they exist. If you're gonna give them real fan bases, you got to actually give them the love that you're giving all the other characters of the trilogy era that get it. You know, like the main crew, I should say.
I'm willing to see them take any shot. You know, if you're gonna tell a story about the Red Dragon, you better goddamn well use like Dagon and hopefully Suhao and yes Movado. Show me those characters in, if not prominent, then at least visible roles. You know,
right?
I don't ask for everyone to be a criminal mastermind. Some people are made to be goons, but just give them a little chance to shine. That's all I ask.
I mean, they better, because, I mean, obviously, Ed Boon's, you know, his word obviously means something to, you know, something different to many people. Some people just laugh it off, or some people take it completely seriously. But, I mean, if you're going to say that they're, like, one of the things they're doing in the new game, or I guess soon is all he said, is that they're going to fix that perception of them basically hating the 3D era characters. You can't just put a couple on the roster and call it a day, because I mean they've already done that. You got to put more on the roster, and you got to actually give them story relevance and make them feel cool, like Temp said, and make them not just jobbers. So
yeah, the first thing you got to do if you specifically want to fix the perception is you can't just be bringing them back because you need people to do fatalities to, because that's right. How they've used them for the past several years.
Yeah,
that's what creates that perception.
Right,
stop
right.
It.
You gotta treat them. Yeah, you gotta treat them just as special as, like some of the more, you know, higher up characters like a Jade or a Reptide. I, you know where I'm going with it. Obviously, not all those characters have been done the best justice either, but they got to be treated like anybody else's big fan favorite character, if not better, because they have to make up for that perception. So they really got to walk a tighter rope. They can't get away with as much. But here, we'll move on to Torrent Virus. Well, I just got a virus. That's all they said. No. They said, can we get an update on how Django is doing? Miss that guy and hope he is making some progress. Well, one, I appreciate you for bringing him up. And two, he is doing good. I talked to him just recently. I think yesterday, actually. I was asking him about some music and whatnot. But so far, everything seems to be going okay, at least that I'm aware of. Obviously, I'll leave it to him to be, you know, divulging into any other medical type stuff that he might be going through. But yeah, so far, I haven't heard anything negative. So I consider that a plus. And since we're on the subject, I want to thank everybody that donated to that GoFundMe, I think it's called, for Django. Because, yeah, he's expressed great appreciation for it. And I know it's really helped him out financially. So definitely appreciate everybody's support.
Is it still open?
Yeah, it's still going. It's still ongoing. Good. And he's been able to withdraw from it like as it goes on. I don't think you have to end it to withdraw from it. So it's already immediately impacted him. So, yeah, tremendous. We set a goal of like 3,200, which was higher than he even originally was asking for because he was being modest. But I know like medical things, man, those have ways of hurting you more than you can even imagine. Just time off work, time from family, taking off work, and so on and so forth. So any dollar that was sent over to him is, I'm sure, greatly appreciated. So thanks everybody, and thanks for bringing that up.
I can also add a little bit of an update too, because we just did a Warrior Shrine recently.
Oh, nice.
He said he's walking better, which is probably the best update I think I've heard recently. So that's he's still. The way he walks is he kind of has to shift his weight on his, I think mostly his right leg.
Right.
So a lot of the physical therapy, it sounds like, is just nerve stimulation and putting weight and like putting like adverse pressure on, you know, the parts that are still paralyzed. So I don't want to go too much into that because I don't want to misspeak. But sure. It sounds like he's making improvement in some areas, but it's ongoing though. It's something that it's a story that's going to keep unfolding. Hopefully, you know, we keep the pace and, you know, things continue to improve. But, we're going to keep the Warrior Shrines coming. I will say this, too. And I told him this after the show. He sounds really good. Like, nice. He sounded like classic Django when we did the Warrior Shrine. It was so good to hear him sound like just the way he did, you know, before everything went down. He sounded great. So that was really good to hear.
I have a lot of faith that he'll get back to almost completely normal, if not normal altogether, because Django's like the hardest working guy I think any of us know.
He's still fairly young too.
This is a guy who can play like the guy can play like a million instruments, like do, you know, the equivalent of a band by himself, and he was learning to program in fucking Unity and Unreal.
Yeah, in case anybody didn't know, he was one of the ones working on the HD remake thing, that the fan-driven one for the MKHD. He was doing the music for that, so I'm sure he was doing what he could to also chip in elsewhere, because yeah. iBallistic Games was the thing that they all created as their own like little development company.
He was also like, once iBallistic started making their own IPs, he was the head guy on a Metroidvania they were working on.
Nice.
So he was learning how to like program that shit himself.
Yeah. I mean, he's a dedicated dude, no doubt about it. So yeah. And then continuing on the Django, the BS asked, where can I buy Django's MK remixes? Well, I don't think they're for sale, but I think you can get them all for free on his SoundCloud, which I can put in the description as you're listening to this. So just check out the description. I'll link to Django's SoundCloud. And also, I think his YouTube is Meister Tracks, M-E-I-S-T-E-R Tracks. And that's where you can find them all on there as well, just on YouTube, all the MK remixes. So you can find them all there.
That said, though, purchasing them implies actually being able to pay money for an actual download as opposed to streaming. And there are intricacies involved there with bitrate and audio quality, so I'm assuming that the BS here would actually like to purchase MP3s or lossless files. That's something that we could maybe ask Django about.
Sure.
Like, in the past, I've actually passed those songs out when they've been asked for on our Discord. I don't know if he wants money for them. I have no idea. He's, like, ages back when he first passed them out, he sent them to all of us and whoever asked for them. So, I'll reach out, I'll clarify with him.
Yeah, we could always do that. And then by the time this goes up, we might have a better answer for you, and we can always just throw that in the comments. So, yeah, just stay tuned. Next up is Dav God. What happened to the intro music to each episode? Recent episodes don't have it. How will I ever know which show is running without it? Whether it is The Lost or The Warrior Shrine or Nethercast?
I mean, it's a good question. It's a very good question.
For the second half of that, I would hope if you just listen for 10 seconds, that you would probably get a good idea.
There's also the thumbnails. You can use your eyeballs.
Some people have confused my and Temp's voices, so it's an understandable mistake.
Sure.
As far as I know, The Lost still always has its intro music.
Yeah, I can only speak to the Nethercast, and I think that's what they're asking for. So, yeah. Since I've been the one that took it back over, back in December, some point when we started the anniversary stuff, I think. The reason why I haven't been including that is because I had to switch to OBS instead of Audition, because we all kind of discovered, I mean, I knew this for years when I was just trying to record, it would like skip, the audio would skip, it would basically eat somebody's word, and it became more and more noticeable as time went on. Or if I would try and like record my voiceover for videos, it would just skip and it'd be a pain in the ass, and I'd have to re-record over and over and over just to get it so it didn't. Never could figure out what that issue is. Wasn't the microphone, wasn't the computer, anything. I think it's just the old program of Adobe Audition, and not wanting to have to pay for a new version of it or anything like that. I just switched to OBS, which they don't have an audio way of recording. So I've just been recording them as videos, and those are huge ass files. Like, I think the one where we did like the roster or something was 20 gigabytes, and that's like the size of most games. So I don't even know how it becomes that. But so it's a mixture of that, of just a different format. If I was still on just audio, it'd be easy to splice that in. Otherwise, I guess I could potentially play it before we actually start talking, and then just lower the volume and then us start talking would be one way. It'd be kind of a jury rig of way to make it happen still. But then the other end of it is, sure, I could, like I said, with the big files, I could always still throw it into an editing software after the fact, that giant ass file, put the music in front of it, and then resave over itself to make it. But then that would be even like, that would be hours upon hours of just waiting for that thing to save and then put it back up. So it's a mixture. The real answer is it's a mixture of switching audio program to a video program, and then not wanting to put in that extra time. Just being, same with why I don't edit these shows to begin with these days, is just, it's a lot of time, a lot of effort. Shad can attest to that, I should say. It's just a lot. And then, I mean, there is, I guess, technically a third reason. It's not why I originally stopped, but over the last few days, it's something I've thought about. And that's, I've learned when it comes to like anything on YouTube, people will take the first chance they can get to stop watching your video or to stop listening to it, I guess, in this case. So if the first thing they hear is 40, 50 seconds of music, they might just lose interest and move on. And that's nothing to do with like the music. I love that fucking music. I just recently made a video on that. It's the fact that it's the same way, I guess, you're not supposed to do like intros to your videos anymore, like the video intros, because if somebody, that's the first thing they see, they're just going to probably move on to something else. They want immediate gratification based on why they clicked on your video. So that's kind of why I've been jumping right into the discussion as fast as I could when it comes to our podcast as well, rather than doing like a long ass introduction. But yeah, that's the long ass answer to your question. Will it never come back? I have no idea. I'm not going to say it won't. Maybe I'll change my mind.
I can honestly say that the intro music for The Lost is not going anywhere. Django did excellent work on those tracks. I intend to keep using them. And if people have short attention spans, well, they can fuck themselves. And I want people listening to us who will bother to sit down and pay a bit of attention. I'm sorry if that sounds harsh.
To watch a Lost, you have to commit at least 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
to
you know, we're typically in it for like 3 to 4 hours sometimes. So I figure that, you know, we attract the patient people and we're happy with that. So thank you.
Yeah. The patron casts will continue to have an intro. Those episodes are shorter though. They're like 45 minutes average, I think, the character redesign episodes. So
yeah. All right. Well, now that we made me feel bad for not doing it still.
Hey man, you do you, but it actually, you have hard work considerations to actually take into account. So I don't blame you.
They're very valid reasons to record the podcast the way you do and to cut out the intro. And I think, you know, I have said before, I appreciate that some of the content on the channel is designed, you know, not to wrestle against the algorithm, because most of my content is wrestling the algorithm all the time.
And also in Cyborg's defense, like when I listen to a podcast that has an intro, I skip that shit.
Yeah, I do too. I literally do that every single time. And like I said, it's nothing to do like with Django's quality. We've used it a ton. I still use his. That's what I talked to him about yesterday, is I literally went onto his SoundCloud and I was digging a lot of music that wasn't even MK music. It was actually music, it turns out, was for another game they were working on that didn't pan out. So he's like, yeah, dude, you could totally use that. Thanks, you know. So I love everything he's done. I think it's badass. It's just more mixture of inconvenience, laziness. I got a million other things going on that I already dedicate my time to. So yeah, it's more of that. But yeah, that's the answer. Anyways, moving on to Assassin 47. How would you reimagine Blaze from a gameplay perspective?
There are two problems with this. Number one, Cinder and Killer Instinct is a thing that exists. The second problem is this: copyright infringement. Next.
Yeah.
No, like, it's so fucking hard when you actually have like the epitome of everything you would want out of like a guy that's completely made of fire out there, isn't it?
Blaze is a tricky one, and I'm not a gameplay guy to begin with, so it's like, well, I wouldn't have him slowly roll across the floor over top of you.
Yeah, not it. Not Armageddon. I mean, Jesus, he could have, like, fire streams. He could have entire walls of fire. This is a thing, a construct, that's a golem that's been designed to be this last obstacle in this age-old quest. He should feel extremely powerful, you know?
I'd probably steal one or two things from Gil from Street Fighter 3, because I like my conception of Blaze as a character is more in line with like the Silver Surfer or the Watcher, and I've said this before, like I'd like to see him sort of, because he's similar to Geras in that he's this guy who's been way off in the background just watching throughout all of history, because he's like waiting and looking for signs that Armageddon is coming, and he sort of knows everything about everything, except for that period where he was captured and forced to guard an egg in a cave.
I think that you're right on money with the Silver Surfer comparison.
Yeah,
he feels like the character who could have like that real cosmic Marvel vibe about
him. Yeah, yeah, you want him to be very like distant and alien and seem like disinterested and dispassionate and like he's looking right at you, but you can tell he's thinking of something far away and above your petty mortal concerns. And it's like, how do you represent that in gameplay? And it's like body language, how does he walk or does he float? You know, how casually does he move his arms when he's casting them forward to shoot a fireball and that kind of thing? So I think about that stuff a lot, but specific moves, not so much. As I recall, Skinny Blaze in Deadly Alliance had a lot of sort of Johnny Cage stolen stuff. He had Scorpion's Hapkido.
He had a straight fireball. He had an uppercut. There was a third thing. Was it a ground pound?
I think it might have been some kind of wheel kick.
Yeah, that was it. I think he stole that from Cage. Yes.
He had a two-fist ground pound as well.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you could do something with a ground pound where it's more like he puts his hand on the ground and lava bends at you.
Maybe you can actually affect your mobility by causing earthquakes and like geysers of fire to come out.
Yeah. The other problem is there are so many people with fire powers, and there's Tremor. It's sort of hard to figure out, well, what hasn't been done? How do we make him not feel like the others?
I mean, I feel like you make Tremor the Earthbender and like leave the fire stuff to people like Blaze.
Well, the thing with earthbending is that volcanic magma is underground too. So if you make a deep enough geyser, some lava is going to shoot out. I don't know.
All right.
Damn, what do you think?
I was going to say that I would basically make him like a mid-range rushdown. So a rushdown character who can start his rushdown from the mid-range. I've been playing a lot of Ram lately, but I think Ram is a good comparison. It's funny y'all saying Cinder, because when I look at Armageddon Blaze, I actually think more of Glacius from KI, but like orange. In terms of like that meaty gameplay of just like putting shit on the screen and coming at you, like the roll and the shoulder charge are not terribly far apart in utility. But yeah, I would just make him super powerful, crazy good corner game. I would make his mobility good too. I think Armageddon actually got a lot of stuff right. It's the ground pound. I think in a new Mortal Kombat game, I feel like that territory is already covered. But just plus frames. Just once he starts throwing fists, like you don't get your turn back, and that's kind of what Ram did in Guilty Gear. And just kind of like the bullying of the mid range with Glacius. I wouldn't want a lot of zoning. Just because I feel like that ground is so heavily covered in Mortal Kombat already, with Sindel, with Cetrion, with MK11, Scarlet, Garrus even. Let's not have any more of that. Let's just make a mid-range asshole. That's what I would do with Fat Blaze.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode. If you asked a question and it was not yet answered, don't worry. We'll be back next week to continue where we left off and answer some more. But for now, we'd appreciate it if you left a like so others will check this out, and make sure to subscribe because there's a lot more to come. Take care. Just kidding. You got your music back. You won, all right? Leave me alone.